his various concepts. Because that is the position, I think it's also sometimes slightly hard when people say, well, okay, if you favour this particular concept, you give me 6 clear examples where obviously you would come to a different conclusion if we had it or if we didn't. Because it's about, one can do that, and we certainly tried to give some examples. But because standard setting involves balancing a number of things, and because the conceptual framework cannot be expected to dictate word for word exactly what the content of each standard is, I think all the examples are going to be somewhat debatable. But some may say that you can get to the same conclusion by a different route. Others may say that you know, they wouldn't necessarily come to that conclusion. So I think these points are need to be just borne in mind as we go forward this morning. I'm now basically on slide 3, which reminds us what the framework as it is today says. It identifies the objective as being decision usefulness, and it characterises that as decisions to buy, hold and sell securities, which requires an assessment of their future cash flows, their amount, timing and uncertainty. It goes on to say that that will be assisted by information on how efficiently management have used resources. And that's the kind of language that really is intended to show that stewardship really is encompassed within a decision useful objective. And it says, well, that's all the decisions you might make are voting, which is perhaps slightly restricted. But that is quite an important second bullet, and that language on how efficiently management have used resources is carefully repeated in the discussion paper at various points, and so I think it it really is key. Part of the debate is really whether that language is broad enough and whether it's prominent enough and whether one can rely on everybody in the future remembering that it's there as well as a buy, hold, sell kind of objective. The basis for conclusion to the framework says that both cash flow prospects and stewardship are important, and the board did not intend to imply that one is more important than the other. So why does it matter? Why is stewardship or indeed accountability important? Well, we think that people who invest in a business or invest in shares are not just buying a slice of the assets and hoping they'll go up in value. They're really taking a view on the prospects of the business, and to do that they need to see how the business is working and how management is behaving. It really wants to, many investors are there for the long term. They can't necessarily or do not wish to engage in active trading. They're really there to try to get a long-term return from their relationship with the company. To do that, they want to dialogue with the company, and dialogue is sort of, in a sense, quite a rich word. It encompasses all kinds of things. Maybe it might be at face-to-face meetings or conferences or whatever, but it also might be by writing letters, by chatting to the people they advise, and through other ways. So it's a very rich kind of process, and to do that they really do need information that reflects how the business is working and not just necessarily whether there is cash available to pay dividends or an increase in fair values or something of that sort. Expressing that slightly more formally, there is what's described as an agent-principal relationship. In other words, the shareholders hire the management to go and go away and manage the business. But the shareholders can't observe management, and that's one of the functions of accounting, is it provides a means of management to report to the shareholders exactly how they've done. And many discussions of the issue say, well, the management might slack on the job. They might, for example, avoid undertaking strategies that are useful and are in the interests of shareholders because it would be, give them a hard job to manage. Or they might shirk and just let the business run without giving it the attention it deserves, or they might unduly enrich themselves. So there are all these kind of risks that at an abstract and formal level arise out of the agent-principal relationship. And I think one can see that, although that is abstract, it seems to have a germ of truth in it. But I think it's important to realise that's only half of the story. An agent-principal relationship is clearly one which is beneficial to both parties and which both parties want to see working. So it's not just for shareholders to get back a report on how management have done, and it's also for management to be able to discharge their responsibility to their shareholders, to reassure them as to how things are going and give them a chance to tell their story. And of course, to do that, it's of great advantage to them if they can do so credibly. And financial statements, which after all are both prepared in compliance with accounting standards and audited, is one of the chief ways in which they can do that. Therefore, that's why we often find that preparers are just as keen on stewardship as investors. So it's not just about making sure management haven't run off with the till. Having said that, there is also another thing that stewardship brings to the table, which is that because management know that they have to report their results, their behaviour is constrained. Frankly, they're more likely to run business in the interests of shareholders if they know they're going to have to tell shareholders how they have done. And therefore, it should, from that perspective, increase the performance of the business. And if one is to do that, I said a moment ago that the various topics in the bulletins, all many of them do, have relationships to each other. That's one reason why some of us are fairly keen on financial statements acknowledging the importance of portraying the results of the business model, so you can see how the business has performed and not just overall changes in assets and liabilities. Now, in one of the papers that led up to the 2010 framework and discussing the issue of stewardship was a statement that people who are after stewardship are really confusing corporate governance with financial reporting. Perhaps that is a slightly strange statement, because you could equally take the view that financial statements are actually one of the key mechanisms of governance. And again, that suggests that stewardship or accountability should be reflected. Another objection was that was made as well. You can't give all the information that needs to assess stewardship. And of course, that's true. Financial statements will never give complete information on anything. They're always going to be partial, but it's equally true for decision usefulness, and that's recognised in the framework. I mean, anybody who knows nothing about a company but simply picks up their annual report and then decides they're going to buy or sell the shares is probably not going to enhance their wealth in the long run, if I can put it that way. We all know that investors spend a great deal of time and energy obtaining information from other sources, the trade press, and so on and so forth. But we do think that financial statements can assist people in assessing management and the performance of the business. And this is not revolutionary after all. It's the sort of thing that we've been doing in accounting for a very long time. It involves things like highlighting non-recurring items. It involves making sure that people can compare one entity with another, so you can see how your management or the management of your shares or one company has done vis-a-vis another. Well, I said that a moment ago that the value of examples is perhaps somewhat limited, but I think there are some particular implications that follow from a stewardship objective, and perhaps follow more directly than they do from a decision useful objective. One is that it emphasises that shareholders are often there for the long term, so they want to know what the long term prospects for the business are, and not just a view necessarily of one period or of the point that's at the end. They want to know how investments are being made to sustain the business, how the business is being run. And they also need to know about all the past transactions and events. They're actually interested in the past. Not only, although it's obviously very important that past transactions are a guide to future results, but also in themselves. Stewardship underlines the importance of confirmatory value. It's not just predictive value, it's saying, well, predictions a year ago, they might be the shareholders or they might be those of management, were that things would turn out in a particular way. Well, how have we done? And how does the how did the last year you're reporting on confirm to what you told us or what we expected last time? This brings me to the Venn diagram of two overlapping circles. We know from quite a lot of literature that's been surveyed that there is a pretty broad consensus that the information on accountability overlaps with that on decision usefulness. And we explain in the paper why we think that should be the case, and that they're not coming from completely different places, and nobody's suggesting that a report for one purpose would be completely different to another. However, there is quite a wide divergence of views as to how extensive the overlap between them is. Some see them only very slightly having information in common. Others see the overlap as almost total. And perhaps one could characterise the ways the framework is written at the moment as being very much in the latter camp. However, even if there is a huge degree of overlap, perhaps there is still value in the framework being crystal clear that accountability is up there alongside decision usefulness, because as I mentioned a moment ago, financial statements are always incomplete. One of the jobs the IASB has to do is to decide what information is it's going to require out of a huge set. Now, if the framework suggests that decision useful is really the be-all and end-all, then it will always prefer that information which is most useful for decision usefulness in favour of that which might be required for accountability. Now, one thing I'm not very good at is the neutrality concept, in the sense that whenever I speak, I'm aware that I tend to make my own views on matters fairly clear, even if I'm trying to be as honest as possible. So let's remember that there are three views set out in the bulletins, and that not all the partners were agreed. Some take the view that what we have in the existing framework, the 2010 revisions, is absolutely fine. Another partner takes the view, no, actually, we think that accountability is the primary objective, and that's how the framework should be written. I don't want to put views into the mouth of the partner that holds that view, but I think their view is that the overlap is pretty well total, and therefore if you had accountability, you would still get decision useful information. And then the third view is the view that accountability is a primary objective and should be given equal emphasis to decision usefulness. On that, some say, well, you can't have that because how will we decide between the two? And I think one observation on that is, well, that's going to be a judgment call that you'll have to make in the circumstances. There are some issues where accountability clearly is the key. Goodwill might be an example. You spent all this money on a company, we want to see, to judge the return you're getting against the total amount paid, therefore we will recognise goodwill. In other cases, one might prefer decision useful information. So that's intended really just to set up the debate and provide a basis for the discussion. In case it helps, the final slide sets out some questions that you might like to have reflected on and that might come up, and I look forward to hearing your views.
I open the floor.
I promised myself I wouldn't go first. Much of what Andrew has said, I'm not troubled by. I think there are some aspects of it, though, where I start to part company. I'm a little surprised that stewardship and accountability being equated with one another. At least in my mind, management is responsible for all of the resources that it has, and it's that responsibility, that economic responsibility for resources, that is stewardship. Whereas I see accountability as being a responsibility of management to provide enough information about what they're doing to the users so that they can make logical decisions. I see it in that light, and it follows from that hierarchy that I wouldn't put accountability and stewardship as objectives of financial reporting. They underpin why you have to report, but they are not the objective of the reporting. They're responsibilities that management has. And to make sensible decisions about an entity economically, you would be interested to know whether management was being sufficiently accountable. So you would be worried if you were concerned about the degree of accountability. And you'd also be worried if management was not reporting fairly comprehensively on the resources that they're entrusted with. So I see their role as quite important, but at the end of the day, I think economic decision making embraces all of that. So I see the overlap is complete, and I would not put stewardship up as a separate objective. But I think what your analysis does tend to bring out is that maybe the language is a little narrow when it talks about economic decision making. And I think in one of your paragraphs, 21, I think it was, there was a distinction between economic decision making and accountability, saying economic decision making was about the future and accountability was about the past. I wouldn't agree with that. I think you have to be accountable for everything that's happening. And in the broader sense of reporting, not just financial reporting, if you were not keeping your shareholders informed of your plans, you would hardly be accountable. You could even be misleading. So I don't make that distinction. But where I think maybe the framework is shy of a few words is in that area that you discussed in terms of confirmatory power. The reason that users want to see the outcome of events and transactions to date is so they can make decisions about the future. So the confirmatory role is really important part of economic decision making. I don't think it's separate, I think it's fundamental to it. So I don't know that I'm in heated disagreement with you, but I certainly wouldn't put stewardship up as an objective of financial reporting or accountability.
Liesl?
Without necessarily intending to, but you hear it anyway in a few sentences, I guess, where we stand, having two competing objectives has a lot of consequences. Because in each and every case you decide something, you have to see if the competing objectives are met. And we think setting two objectives will have an array of consequences for all kinds of decisions in the framework and in standards. And this is something which some people are more reluctant to say aloud, whereas those specifically in our board who maybe think a little more abstract say, well, fine, if you have two objectives, then that multiplies all your decision points, and that's not what we really want to go for. And we think that the understanding of decision-making purpose maybe needs a bit more clarification. And in the end, and therewith I state where we stand, we think that decision-making is about sort of leaving everyone in peace because they've done their job very well, and then looking forward. The sort of accountability stewardship is a point in time, but you always look backwards and forwards because it's linked with each other. And decision making is too, to say where we are is fine. And again, setting two different objectives and even claiming they compete is going to make life extremely troublesome.
So what is your suggestion? What does this?
To maybe enforce in the language somewhere that accountability hasn't got lost. However, not to set it up as two separate objectives side by side, because if you do that, then in each and every decision, what you put on the balance sheet, what you recognize, how you measure things, you always have to see if they are in line with your two objectives. And they sometimes might be, but they sometimes might not, and then you have to decide. It's what we usually, in fact, win it as call traffic rules, because as soon as you've got two things, you have to have traffic rules somewhere.
So you would say something to the effect stewardship is an integral part of the information, economic decision, useful information.
You can emphasize more than is in the text right now that that we know there is accountability and that we know there is stewardship, but don't hang it too high because that's going to be very difficult.
It's reasonably high already, though, isn't it?
Equal.
Okay, thank you very much. This is a very tough issue. So even within Europe, there are three different views. So when considering the objective...
What do you mean, even in Europe? Especially in Europe. We are glad that we only have three different views.
Considering the objective of general purpose financial reporting, we believe the concept of fulfilling the stewardship does not precede all the objective of decision usefulness. So in most cases, information relevant to fulfill the stewardship and information relevant for decision usefulness are considered to be the same. For example, the concept of all inclusiveness, which we use that in the later session, would be necessary for investors to assess the future net cash flows of the entity, while the importance of the concept of all inclusiveness would be reinforced in light of fulfilling the stewardship. However, in some limited situations, the scope of information relevant to achieve the objectives would differ depending on which objectives should be achieved. For example, information about compensation to key management personnel may not be necessary in light of decision usefulness, but it may be considered as important in light of stewardship. So maybe paragraph OB3 and OB4 of the existing conceptual framework seem to suggest that information relevant for decision usefulness and always encompass the information for stewardship. So therefore, it might be helpful if the conceptual framework could be amended to clarify that these objectives may be different in some respects. So although information drawn from the two objectives overlap in most cases. So in that respect, we are of the similar view. We are not sure, but we are of the similar view of the EFRAG and the EFRAG.
François?
Yes, thank you. Just to give you how the discussion has gone within the consultative forum of standard setters, I think, and let's start with what we have in common. everybody believes that providing information so that stewardship can be assessed is information that is valuable. Then the view that allowing investors to assess stewardship to be the primary objective, that one remains isolated from the discussion we've had. And the question really is how much people believe in either overlaps or possible competition. So Liesl has expressed the view that you're better off if you keep the decision's usefulness having primacy because of the possible difficult competition. And in fact, the view that is held by many others that hold also the view that ICO has expressed is that if you recognize that both needs have to be fulfilled, basically you find the accounting solution so that no need remains unfulfilled. So it's not a question of competition and having to decide one against the other. It's a question of having taken into account the full needs that needs to be fulfilled and finding the most effective way in doing so.
Clement?
Yeah, I after listening to Andrew's presentation, I'm sort of focused on that slide, you know, with the three wheels. To me, I think if you're asking, you know, about the relative merits of the three wheels being listed, the middle one, accountability, is the primary objective. I would rule that out. I think accountability, there's no doubt about it. It's important, but whether it's the only, you know, sort of primary objective. If you're talking about stewardship, If stewardship is the primary one, then I would be questioning about why are we spending so much time in looking at measurement, looking at recognition. To me, it's more sort of the decision usefulness, that angle, that objective is more of a primary one to me, and. Well, but again, you know, stewardship, the present wording right now did touch upon that, how efficiently management have used resources. I think that in a way, you know, covers a certain degree of stewardship. But if we are saying that stewardship is the most important sort of consideration for general purpose financial statement, then all this focuses all this effort on the valuation, the market valuation, whether it represents the true value to the stakeholders. Are we on the wrong track if that is the objective?
Kim?
Thanks, Hans. I would actually, just want to echo what Francois has said, and that I think that financial reporting should be addressing all aspects, and I almost see that stewardship or accountability is a qualifying characteristic of what is decision useful information. So I guess when I started reading the paper, it was also a question of saying, well, why wouldn't this information be decision useful, and therefore is it really a case of them being in conflict with each other, etc. I think as I say, they're almost like characteristics of information that is useful, and therefore I don't think that one should be focusing on one or the other. I think they both need to be addressed in meeting the objective of financial reporting.
So on slide 9, I took it that that Francois was in the third category. Is that correct, Francois, in what you were saying?
Yes.
But where would you sit, Kim?
Well, I guess I would also see myself perhaps in the third category, but as I say, for me, it's it's maybe just articulating it slightly differently. So I certainly do not believe it's the primary objective, certainly not. But I think that in explaining and defining what is decision useful information.
So the question is decision useful the primary?
Well, again, it's this question around then, well, what is decision useful? And is decision useful purely looking at the future, or isn't it not important in making one's decision also looking back at the past? So I think for me it's this question around, well, what really is meant to be decision useful? And I would therefore articulate these as being characteristics of what would be important information for people to make decisions. And if that is decision useful information, it's all of those elements need to be met in order for the information to be useful.
I mean, I'd agree with that. I have trouble, I think, as you do, with the notion that if we don't have stewardship up high, we don't look at past transactions. I would have thought past transactions are exceptionally important in decision usefulness.
Correct.
You need to know what's done.
Exactly.
And so I don't see decision usefulness as focusing on the future.
Correct. Nor do I.
All.
That's right.
And then, I mean, I've just been at IPSASB, where they say accountability is the prime,
yes,
because that's public sector, and they say it's different. But then they've got onto the cost versus current argument and said historical cost is really important in stewardship or accountability. Whereas I would have thought in a lot of circumstances, actually current information is very important. You know, I don't think that stewardship leads you back to cost.
Because just to add to that, you know, often we find fixation on saying, well, because these were once-off events, you'll find sometimes that if people are only looking to the future, that there's this desire to try and exclude those things and to say, well, it doesn't matter, that all happened, it's not going to, you know, be repeated in the future. But, you know, it goes back to the all-inclusive point. Well, what were the reasons for those things? You know, could things have been done differently or whatever? And it's all about, therefore, assessing accountability or stewardship. So I agree. So I think one needs to be careful as to how one defines decision useful and to make sure, therefore, that it's not purely looking at the future, but it's looking at all information which is relevant.
Ross?
Thanks. I thought the paper and the presentation were very well done. When I think about the objective of financial reporting, I think that it should be about giving information to investors about making buy, sell, and hold decisions. I think the way they do that is based on the prospects of cash flows, and I think that the way they assess the cash flows are the entity's resources, i.e. assets, claims, and then how efficiently and effectively management is using or carrying out their role. When I compare that philosophy to the framework, I think the existing framework has it right. And so when I go back to slide 9, we would be in the first one. That is, the existing framework is adequate.
I think if we would include accountability in the framework, we would have to define it because it's a very wide concept. And when an entity presents its financial statements to shareholders or other users, it shows the financial situation and the performance of the entity. So I think accountability, management accountability, is implicit in those financial statements. I think accountability is inherent to financial statements, and it's also implicit in the conceptual framework. And I don't think accountability and decision usefulness is very different. I think they are both compatible. When management should adopt the decisions that are best to the entity, and so also best to users or investors or creditors. So if I go to slide number 9, I would go to first view. The existing framework is adequate.
Roger?
I think the question is how you define decision usefulness, and if you define it as Russ has just defined it, which is about buy, sell, hold securities, that to me is a narrower objective than many users of financial statements want around the world. They also want information to enable them to hold management to account, even if they have no intention of selling their securities. That's what long-term investors do. Now, I don't mind redefining.
It's the second word, buy, hold, or.
Buy, sell, or hold.
Yeah, buy, sell, or hold.
I said they may have no intention of selling, but what they want to do is they want to hold management to account. Okay. Now, I think the current definition of decision usefulness does not actually give enough information which is useful for accountability. So that so on that basis, I'm not in the first of the three categories in slide 9. I'm with AFRAG on the second.
Yes, please.
Thank you. Generally, we agree with the view 3, that is on the slide page 9, the view 3. actually, in Chinese conceptual framework, these two objectives are explicitly addressed. Because in our opinion, we think that these two objectives of financial reporting, we can see more coincidence with the development of the capital market. Take China, for example, maybe more than 10 years ago, there is a lot of debate about which one is the objective of financial reporting. Maybe in 1980s or 1990s, the Chinese accounting standards focus more on the stewardship or accountability, and that is the primary objective of financial reporting. At that time, people are quite comfortable with this objective, but with the development of the capital market and with the with the development of the market economy, people realized that under the agent-principal relationship, these two objectives can coincide with each other. And so maybe in this century, in around 2000, when we are when we were start the revising our Chinese accounting standards, these two objectives are all included in our basic standard, that is the conceptual framework of Chinese accounting standards. And people now are quite comfortable with these two objectives. This is the first point. And another point is that maybe we think these two objectives is a high level or overall per objectives of financial reporting. But for the specific issue, for example, in the DP section 6 about management, I remember that this section addressed two objectives of the management. One is related to the decision usefulness, and another one is related to the stewardship from the perspective of management. We think for this specific measurement issue, maybe more research or more focus should be on how to balance these two objectives when we are choosing the measurement basis. This is our second point. Finally, we think translation is not a problem, because one of the reasons that the stewardship concept is removed is relating to the translation. But we think translation is not a problem, because stewardship or accountability has a long history. And I can recall that in November at the China, Japan, and Korea Three Countries Accounting Standards meeting, we try to coordinate with each other how to translate it, the stewardship accountability in each language. It's not a problem. So
It's a biblical term, and the Bible has been translated in all the languages imaginable. So.
Okay, that's all. Thank you.
Linda?
Thanks. I would say from our perspective, we would probably fall in very closely in terms of the way Russ expressed it. It's we focus when we think about the financial statements around decision useful information for that decision making. What was interesting to me when I read the papers and thought about it, I think the traditional mindset would be that within Canada, the things that when we talk about governance, we think about that coming from other place, the guidance around governance coming from other places than accounting standards. And so the items that make a company have good governance or that influence management's behaviors and those things you're talking about in accountability tend to come from corporate securities law and stuff like that. And we tend to keep those separate. So as we focus on the financial statements from a decision useful perspective, I think as I read all of the papers, the thing that I was thinking about was whether in other areas or where people use different terms or have different frameworks, is it harmful to introduce these concepts? And I'm not clear on that yet, but the key would be that if we choose to introduce, you know, accountability and whatever, we need to do so with enough understanding of how we mean it. Because my overall concern will be that as we move through the rest of the discussion this morning, if we give so much weight to what in essence tends us towards conservatism or pulls us away from some sort of objective view or neutrality, that we're going to give a weight to that in terms of financial reporting that would be, I think, somewhat troublesome.
I must say, this is one of the discussions that I wonder why we are even having it. The word financial, the term financial reporting, I think says it all. It's about management telling its investors, what did we do with your money and how successful have we been, and we may have some expectations about the future. This is an essential part of corporate governance. And as I said in a speech, I think financial reporting is all about accountability. That is the reason why it has such an important place in our public capital markets, which have huge agent principal problems. That's why we have all securities regulation, et cetera, et cetera. So all to make sure that management is telling the true story to the investor. So I think it is the essence of financial reporting. And I would say, I would tend to come close to the goal of that accountability is actually the all-encompassing objective of financial reporting. And why has this again become a sort of a political debate? It all has to do with notions that there are two types of investors. There is the long-term investor, and then there's the short-term investor. And the short-term investor is not at all interested in a relationship with management, just wants to buy and sell, not hold. And it deals with, does its work with computer programs, doesn't even look at the financial statements. And that's because stewardship was taken out as a term out of the concept framework. Those are the guys that the ISB is now doing its work for, and not for the long-term investor who is, who is interested in the long-term, who wants to hold management to account. I think it's a completely false argument. I also think that it is true that there's a lot of short-term investment around, but even long-term investments churn their portfolios extremely regularly, and there may be investors who indeed are not interested in having a relationship with management simply because they don't have the means to do so. But that doesn't mean that financial reporting and holding management to account is not important to them. I mean, they base their decisions on the financial statements, and I think where and you know, I absolutely see no competition between decision's usefulness and the accountability issue. I very much liked Ico's suggestion that this economic decision useful information always includes accountability or stewardship. I think where the framework may have caused misunderstanding is where it has sort of submerged accountability or stewardship under the goal of looking at future, estimating future cash flows. Whereas, I mean, that obviously that is, I think an investor implicitly always does that. Did a management do a lousy job last year, they will probably not be able to generate solid future cash flows. But I think that by Kevin mentioned that by not giving enough attention to the confirmatory value of financial statements, that this ambiguity or ambivalence has caused problems. So I think we can actually solve that very easily in the conceptual framework by giving stewardship to define it not as a subset to estimating future cash flows, but giving it a more of an independent position. But again, I really don't see the issue. I really don't see any tension between the goal of decision useful information and stewardship.
I have two questions to you. One is the relationship between the information useful for assessing the effectiveness of the management and the entity. You know, I noticed in some of the slides you try to link them together. My question to you is, what's the relationship? The reason why I ask this question is, in chapter on OCI, Paul said we failed to define distinction between OCI and income or profit loss, and we select some of the benchmark, like whether it is under or outside of management control, or unusual or not unusual items. I can feel there is some kind of difference. So my question to you is, what's your view? And my second question related to the long-term nature of investment. The page 7, Hans already touched. And my question to you is related to the environment of corporate, the capital market. I recently noticed there are two research in China related, maybe have some relationship. One is the overall average ownership of the number one shareholding in different countries, they may be different. And lowest percentage is the US, is about 15 or 17%. Yeah. There are different research, you know, people may calculate differently, but in many other countries like in Singapore, in Taiwan, in Korea, or in many European nations, the ratio of the number one shareholding will be relatively high. Some of them may be close to 50%. And another statistical information they use is related to the turnover ratio of the shares in the market. And they use the New York Stock Exchange number. I'm not sure whether they're wrong or not. Said in 1960, the turnover ratio is 20%. 70, 25%, and 80, 40%, 90, 60%, 2000, 90%, 2010, 120%, you know. And use these two kind of information, and people may can feel, you know, is there any difference between the usefulness in terms of long-term investors or short-term investors? My question to you is, you know, is there any relationship on decision useful information for short-term, long-term investors in relation to the environment? So two questions.
You got the floor.
Thanks. No, I think there's a useful. Those are things I would really need to reflect on to give you an informative answer. Certainly, we agree that it's true that long-term investors do sometimes sell their shares. There's almost no situations where we're absolutely locked in. But there are many situations where I think many investors do regard certain shareholdings as key and would much rather try to improve the company's performance by dialogue with management rather than by necessarily simply relying on their ability to sell.
And I was slightly winding you up by ducking it. I think it's an interesting question as to do long-term investors need different information to short-term investors? And of course, there's two major styles of investing, isn't there? At least two major styles. There's value investing, when I think people are using financial information much more than perhaps, say, momentum investing. I don't know what the statistical evidence is about the length of time that value investors hold shares, for example, as opposed to momentum investors. But I would have thought value investors are likely to hold their shares for longer until in fact the price has either caught up with the value that they're ascribing, or indeed they've realized that that they've changed their view on value. But I think that's a very good question, but I'm with Andrew. I'd like to think about it further and also see what evidence there is.
Kevin?
I think we've got to be careful in dividing long-term investors from short-term investors, because whether the short-term investors actually use financial statements or not, they are affected by financial information. And whether you're right into efficient market theory or not, the suggestion is in a semi-strong market at least that information is impounded into share prices very quickly. So those who are working off the effect of the information or those who are studying the information are alike, whether short or long term. So they are free riders on financial reporting even if they don't read the financial statements.
Yeah.
Hams, could I?
Yes.
I wanted to pick out three things that have come up in the discussion. The first is a couple of people early on mentioned confirmatory value and predictive value. I just wanted to remind you there is a discussion of that in Chapter 3 under the relevance heading. It's not under the objectives, but there is a discussion there. And in fact, the beginning of that discussion does link back to the objectives and decisional usefulness. So I think that material is there. Whether the links are clear enough is another question, I guess. The second thing is, I wanted to report back to you something we've been hearing a bit in the outreach, which comes back to a point that Lee was making earlier, really. And I think a lot of this debate is about the degree of prominence, really, because I think that the basic ingredients are there. It's a question of how much prominence we want to give them. And I think that's not just a question of whether it's right in Chapter 1, but it's also whether it's going to be right through the rest of the framework. And what we did in some of the individual chapters in the DP was we tried to link it back to the overall objectives. But we also wanted to make sure that by linking it back, we didn't shortcut too much. And for example, just say future cash flows and make people think that's the only element in the decision making to get to the overall objective. And so, as you mentioned in Chapter 6, we refer both to the cash flows and assessing performance and also the effectiveness and efficiency wording. And one reaction we've had in a few places in the outreach is some people read that as giving it more prominence than there was in Chapter 1. And we weren't actually trying to give it more prominence, we were trying to link it back and make sure it stayed the same. But I think that might be useful in thinking about whether we've got the right degree of prominence there and whether we're able to carry the right degree of prominence through the rest of the framework. The third thing, right at the beginning, Andrew asked the question really about why the notion had been dropped, and he picked up some words from the basis that talked about confusing corporate governance with other issues. And I think Kevin actually had put his finger on what the issue was there, really, which is I think people have sometimes confused two different notions. There's the sort of stewardship, which is management's responsibility to actually use the assets and do what they're supposed to be doing, and the accountability, what you describe as accountability, which is their responsibility to report back on it. And I think a lot of the passion we get in this debate has been people thinking that if we don't get quite the right degree of prominence for accountability, we might be dropping stewardship over the assets, which is in any case nothing to do with us. So I think whatever we do there, we need to be clear that what we're talking about is really more that part of it, the responsibility for the reporting, rather than the responsibility for actually doing things with the assets.
So your inclination would be, if we do reintroduce a term, that it should be accountability rather than stewardship?
I'm a bit more neutral on that. I suspect accountability might be better, but I think whichever we did, if we did anything, we need to make it clear we are only talking about the reporting responsibilities, yeah. not the other responsibilities. Yeah.
I was just reacting. I mean, I would agree that when you talk about financial reporting, you're talking about reporting, and that is closer to accountability. But the issue is, what are you reporting on? And the stewardship is the responsibility on which you're reporting. Mm. So, and I think when we raise stewardship, it's a shortcut that we take to say, provide information that is useful to assess whether stewardship has been. So it's a shortcut.
Been taken care of.
Yeah, we. I don't think we're confusing the wording.
Okay. I think that was useful. Are there any other comments?
No? Then we continue with
Andrew.